After contemplation, I conclude that this award, which I receive on behalf of that movement, is a profound recognition that nonviolence is the answer to the crucial political and moral questions of our time. The need for man to overcome oppression and violence without resorting to violence and oppression. Civilization and violence are antithetical concepts. Negroes of the United States, following the people of India, have demonstrated that nonviolence is not sterile passivity, but a powerful moral force which makes for social transformation.
You're listening to Heart of Mind, Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and today we have a very special program, and we are speaking to you about a series called Manifesting the Dream. And this is We the World's program to carry forward the work and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And these words we just heard from Dr. King, we will explain in just a moment, but let me introduce my guests. We're speaking with Rick Ulfick, and he is the founder of We the World and the We campaign at we.net. Rick is the co-creator of 11 Days of Global Unity, 11 Ways to Change the World, with participants including Desmond Tutu, Jane Goodall, Deepak Chopra, Eve Ensler, Bill McKibben, and many others. Rick has served as a nonviolent communication workshop facilitator and leader working with Tom Bond and the New York Center for Nonviolent Communication. Also joining us is Sharon Rhea, founder of No Judgment, Just Love, whose mission is to inspire us all to live together with unconditional allowance, one courageous action at a time. She is a dynamic facilitator as well as a compassionate life and family coach. And she works through thewholefamilycoaching.com and nojudgmentjustlove.com. And coming up very soon, there will be an event that we want to talk about that today. And that's the Nonviolent Communication, a live interactive broadcast and workshop, which is going to be taking place on Tuesday, February 11th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, featuring Tom Bond. And he is the founder of the New York Center for Nonviolent Communication. And so why don't we start off, Rick, by you giving us a thought about those words by MLK that you provided. And then let's go on to talk a little bit about Tom Bond and the Center for Nonviolent Communication.
Okay. Thank you, Catherine. It's great to be on your show again. And thank you for being part of this program of We the World, the Manifesting the Dream, carrying forward the work and legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. program. It's going through February 29th, and you can find out more and actually sign up yourself. And if you have an organization, you can, your organization can collaborate on this as well. If you go to we.net/MLK, we.net/MLK. And so, yes, we're excited because we've been doing a bunch of different service activities related to the work and legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. And in fact, we've had some broadcasts, we've had some in-person events and all kinds of things. And Sharon Rhea has been doing some of these as well. We'll hear from her later in this show. So coming up, as you said, on Tuesday, February 11th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to be doing, it's an interactive broadcast and a workshop on nonviolent communication. And Tom Bond will be leading people in this. And if people want to be part of that, and because it's interactive, and if you want to watch the broadcast, then it would be a matter of going to We the World's Facebook page. And that's at facebook.com/theWeCampaign. That's all you need to know to watch the broadcast. We'll be doing Facebook Live on February 11th at 6 p.m. Eastern time. So now that we got the details out of the way, Tom Vaughn is a thought leader and an author and activist and the founder of the New York Center for Nonviolent Communication. He was the creator of the Compassion Course, which is a year-long course that's done mostly through email texts that's sent each week. And I think they're going to be starting that up in June. All of that information you could find out about by going to nycnvc.org. And he was a close associate of Marshall Rosenberg, who was the person who created nonviolent communication more than 35 years ago. And nonviolent communication is a very powerful tool to prevent and resolve conflicts between people in their families, their work situations, their love relationships, all of that. And it's very powerful. I've found it to be very powerful. And I got very involved. I got to the point of actually facilitating and co-facilitating these 9 and 10 week workshops on nonviolent communication. And I thought maybe I could give like a bit of an overview about the power and importance of nonviolent communication as I see it.
That would be great. I was just thinking that I would love to give people an example of what that sounds like.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's interesting. Well, we can get into some specifics like that. I think that's a good idea. Just as an overview, I guess the way I relate to it in terms of the current political climate that we see in the United States and even around the world, in reaction to the us versus them mentality that underlies political polarization and the culture wars we hear so much about, I'm really glad to see many people are explicitly saying that we all have much more in common than what divides us. And I think nonviolent communication shows us in great detail the universal values and aspects of being human that all people share. And that's one of those ways of looking at all of the things that we share that is common to all of us. So the way NVC expresses this is that not only do all people share needs that are physical, like air, water, food, and shelter, we also share what you could call psychological needs, like love, respect, meaning, dignity, integrity, security. I mean, there's a long list. In fact, there are over 90 of these universal needs, physical and psychological, that NVC talks about. And those together represent a commonality that transcends politics and polarization. I think getting these ideas into the public discourse over the coming months is important to address the disunity that we are seeing now, as you know, in the run-up to the 2020 elections, and of course coming out of the whole impeachment saga. So NVC actually makes a list of all of these needs, and there's a place where you can access this. And it's a very interesting website. It's called theexercise.org. And this is where you can get a real taste of what it means to try out nonviolent communication. So if you go to theexercise.org, you'll see that they talk about shifting toward compassion. And basically, you'll see a process there that can be helpful if someone said something to you that you did not like hearing. And as part of the process, they have links there to two important lists. One list is universal feelings, the feelings that people have when their needs are met, or the feelings that they have when their needs are not met. And that list is very powerful because it's kind of like an indicator of what's happening inside. You know, like if you're feeling angry or you're feeling upset or some, you know, whatever feelings you're feeling, it's usually an indication of some need or needs of yours not being met. And you know, we're not really taught to think this way in school or even in life. So having the list of feelings in front of you is helpful because it can help you to connect with what's going on in your own emotional state, because you may not be thinking that way, and it can help, you know, to help guide you towards understanding what's happening with yourself. And then those needs, those feelings can be connected to the needs that are not being met for you, which is why you're feeling upset in some way, let's say. So on this website, you can actually download the list of universal feelings and the list of universal needs. And the whole process itself is very helpful, I find, to better understand what's going on for yourself and to start thinking about what's going on for the person who said something that you didn't like hearing. So that's why this process at this website, theexercise.org, is so helpful. And I just want to say one thing about a huge benefit that for me, knowing that all people's actions are to meet one or more of these needs. I mean, that's one of the most powerful aspects of having an actual list of these needs, you know, because if it is true, and it seems to be true, I mean, thousands of people have been doing this for decades at this point, and it's in all cultures and many, many languages. It seems that all people's actions are done to meet one or more of these needs. And what that means is if we want, we can let go of our labels and generalizations and our judgments about people, which are based on things that they're doing that we don't like, because we have at least the power, if we want, to see that these people are just attempting to meet the same needs that we all share. Now, the way they're doing it, we may not like and may not work for us. You know, we call those strategies. So that's one aspect of it. The needs can never come into conflict. You know, if you think about the need for, let's say, appreciation or empathy or love or security or the need for meaning or communication or freedom or dignity, all of these needs can never come into conflict because we all share them. What comes into conflict are the strategies that people adopt to meet their needs, you know? And you can imagine that in all kinds of different ways, people do things to meet their needs that don't work for other people. But if we can communicate with those people, starting with the needs that we all share, then we have a way of talking about it and then potentially coming up with a new strategy that works for all the people involved in a conflict. That seems to be always possible, to create a new strategy that works for people on both sides of a conflict. And so, as I was saying, when you think about how people are doing things to meet one or more of these needs, then we can let go of the judgments that we might have about people, like, oh boy, they're really stupid, or they're just whatever. And whatever labels and generalizations we make about them, we can let them go and let those judgments go if we start thinking about just they're doing these things to meet certain needs. And I think about that because we're on the show today with Sharon Rhea, who has been talking a long time about letting judgments go. And so that's where I think this can connect with what she's doing.
Oh, well, yeah, I think so. In fact, I would love for you, Sharon, to play off what Rick said a little bit in terms of the needs and strategies, because to me that does sound really powerful, because in the back of my mind I'm thinking about how people get caught up and turn themselves into pretzels to try to bring about some kind of result. And it became very clear to me when you said that, Rick, that it's the strategies that get us into all kinds of complicated situations and relationships. It's not the needs, it's the strategies. I find that very powerful. Sharon, if you have, before you talk more about your own program, I would like for you to reflect on what Rick said about this.
Thank you. And again, thank you, Catherine, for inviting me on to your show and in this particular conversation. I have experienced the world in a lot of different ways. And when Rick speaks about needs, I think for at least us in America, we don't really take the time to be with ourselves. We're mostly focused externally. What's going on in the world? Who am I supposed to relate to? Why can't they change the way they talk to me? What is it that's supposed to make me happy based on society's definition? And when we look outside of ourselves, it's very hard to recognize that we have a need that isn't met. And so, Rick, I really applaud the 90, the list of 90, because that's got to encompass most, if not everyone. And I believe everyone. But the problem with us not knowing our needs and not being able to speak in a compassionate, nonviolent way, and more importantly, listen in a compassionate, nonviolent way, is because we're most often speaking through our pain rather than from our peace and joy, in my view. And when you're speaking from your pain, you're speaking through those needs that have not been met. And you're unaware, more often than not, that that's what you're doing. And you're more reacting, we are more reacting to each other's method of communication, Catherine, like you just defined, the strategies of how we get our messages across are what keeps continuing to keep us stuck in the pain of our unmet need and the reaction of you continuing to hit that need by how you choose to communicate. I think the other thing that we have a challenge with in our society is that we're focused on fixing other people, you know, instead of really honoring that it's us. We are the common denominator in every communication we have. And when we look outside of ourselves and don't recognize that we are responsible, we have the responsibility and the opportunity to do something different in our communication. We push people away through our labels, Rick, through shunning them, through debasing them, through judging them, so that we protect that part of us that is the unmet need, that is the pain. And then the third part of that for me is that I don't see many people being willing to change. In order to employ a different way of communicating, a different way of looking at the world and moving around, we have to embrace that everything is change. Whatever happened 10 seconds ago is going to change. Winter changes into spring. It doesn't say, spring, sorry, can't let you come. I'm really enjoying this cold weather. Spring says, I'm coming whether you're ready or not. And so I think with change is important for us to identify two things. One, are we willing to change? Are we willing to consider that we have a need that isn't met? Are we willing to download the exercise and actually try it? And then if we are willing to do those things, the next most important thing is, do we choose to speak differently, not only to ourselves, but to other people? And hopefully that choice will give you the opportunity to consider nonviolent communication as well as no judgment, just love.
Excellent. So maybe expand a little bit more on your own perspective of inspiring humanity, as you say on your website, no judgment, just love. And how do we get to the point from where we are now, where people don't want change or don't want to change, to get to the point where we can have that compassion for humanity and for each other? And I think most importantly, from those people we perceive to be our opponents or our enemies.
Thank you, Catherine. The way I choose to inspire is to live this message. And it is work. I mean, to not judge is not human. And we all are human. So we're going to judge all the time. That is normal. It's natural. And that's not the problem. The problem is not that you judge. It's what you do or what you say or how you treat people after you make that judgment. And so my goal to inspire is to live and offer this for people to consider. Because just a small aside, I choose to do no harm as often as I can with my communication. And if someone is not ready to shift to what I believe is a more compassionate way to live in the world, I do harm if I try and force them. Because now we're in a violent, antagonistical, back and forth competition. And I have incited and welcomed this battle because this person is not ready. And so the compassionate thing for me and the nonviolent thing to me is allow them to be and love them anyway and choose to not be around them, which would cause me harm as well as them. So when I'm choosing after I've heard something, and this week I have to tell you very personally, I could not listen to many of the things being communicated in our government. I've been a lobbyist in New York. I know government. I enjoy it. But this week, my heart just couldn't listen to all of the violent conversations that were going on. So to employ no judgment, just love, the first thing I do is I hear it. If it resonates, great. We're going to be able to have a more compassionate conversation. If it doesn't, the first thing I do is pause. And like Rick said, I have an opportunity to identify what my need was that person hit, my pain point that conversation jaggedly hit, and pause. Take a breath and choose to respond instead of react. Now, in my response, I invite people to use what I call my GPS. And your GPS is your greatest personal shift. That's change. And that shift hopefully will take you to your highest and best self. That's where you have way more answers of how to either respond or, more importantly, not. Just because someone is saying something that you don't like doesn't mean you have to respond. It doesn't mean you have to change them. It doesn't mean you have to disagree with them. You can choose to allow them to just be.
Excellent. Let me ask you this. I know that you have done a lot of work through family coaching. In fact, we've spoken before, and I was really fascinated with the way that you do work with and inspire families and young people. But when you bring up the whole situation with the politics, it really does bring to mind my personal workspace, which is a very political environment, being a radio station. And I find that one of the difficulties I see is that people have a tendency is to put their opponents into a box of some kind, and they can't, it doesn't matter what that person does, they somehow never can get to a space of examining what they have to say or accepting as a potential way forward because they've already created a box. So my curiosity is it really that people are creating boxes and putting other people in it, or are they just fortifying and refortifying their own encasement?
You know, Catherine, from my perspective, I think it's a combination of both. I think that many of us are moving through the world with pain, with things that have happened to us that have caused us to make a cover around ourselves. And anybody who doesn't agree becomes prickly and becomes difficult to deal with because I personally have not dealt with the pain. And so when you speak, you keep hitting my pain point. And so I need to make you stop. And in making you stop, I do put a box around you because putting a box will separate you from me, which creates the us and them, which Rick and his beautiful organization is hoping to get us to the we. When we recognize that everyone has value. You don't have to agree with their value. You don't have to agree with what they're saying. Everyone is worthy to be here. And you get to choose whether or not you can accept that and let them be. We don't have to change the people that are not willing, ready to listen to us. We can have a conversation where we talk about what's important to us, but in order to be able to listen, which I think is a way more important tool than talking, to listen to someone who has an absolute different perspective of how they choose to live in the world requires you to take care of your own self first. And if you haven't done that, you can't do that, you're not willing to do that, no judgment for you, but don't engage in a conversation.
Yeah, I could see that. And I think one of the things I also wanted to touch on, and Rick, maybe you can weave back in. So when we listen to the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we can recognize that he was using nonviolent communication and nonviolent activism as a very powerful tool towards a cultural mindset that was actually quite aggressive and quite dangerous at the time. And in many ways, this is still the case. So how do we approach nonviolent communication from the perspective of warring factions or opposing countries, opposing political groups? How do we begin to introduce these concepts, though the other person might have no idea of the concept? How do we approach that?
Right. And that is the challenge. And maybe that is the biggest challenge that we're facing as a civilization, right? Some people think that the biggest challenge that we're facing comes before climate change and the mass extinction of species. And that challenge is intolerance. Because if we can't work together and be together and support each other, then we're not going to be able to deal with these giant existential threats that we have, like climate change. So yeah, there are some practical ways that we can talk about that people can engage on a personal level. And you mentioned about your work at the station, at radio stations, or in political groups, or really in any kind of working environment. The people that we find that we might be in conflict with, or we don't like, you know, what they're doing or saying, they don't have to change. They don't have to know anything about nonviolent communication or no judgment, just love. They don't have to know anything about that for us to start to modify how we interact with them. So one way, like Sharon was saying, is if we find that we can't interact in a way that is supportive of communication and any kind of productive relationship, then of course it makes sense to disengage. But let's say if we're working with people and we want to engage with them, even if we don't like what they're doing, then there are ways to engage with them that can begin to diffuse the conflict and begin to change things for the better. And one way to do that is through empathy. So nonviolent communication has a very specific way of thinking about empathy, and I can describe that. So, and the first thing to understand, the most important aspect of empathy, is to realize that we may have to give ourselves empathy first. And this idea that I know Sharon has talked about, and we talk a lot about it in NVC, is this idea if you're in an airline, and what they say to do is if the pressure drops, you put that oxygen mask on yourself first, even before your child or someone that you care about that you're with or the people around you. Because if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be in shape to deal with or even be completely open to wanting to care about the people around you if you're hurting yourself. So the first, and if you go to this website, theexercise.org, you'll see that that is specifically designed to do that, to put that oxygen mask on yourself first before you can even start thinking about the other person that, let's say, you don't like what they said to you or you don't like what they're doing in a workplace or some other situation or in a relationship. So the idea of giving empathy in NVC is about looking, exploring what are the feelings that you are feeling if you're giving yourself empathy. What are those feelings that are up for you? If you're upset, they probably are going to be feelings that are associated with a need or one or more needs that are not being met on your end. So giving yourself empathy is about exploring and really articulating clearly in your own mind what those needs, what those feelings are. Are you feeling anger? Are you feeling disconnection or pain, fear, sadness, tension? You'll see when you go to that website and download the feelings sheets, it's quite comprehensive. So for example, under the area of disconnection, I'm just looking at the sheet myself so I can read these. Under disconnection, there's you're feeling apathetic, bored, closed, detached, distant, indifferent, listless, numb, withdrawn. So it gets very detailed, and you can really kind of start to understand what's going on with yourself in terms of your feelings. And then it's important to see what those feelings are indicating in terms of what needs are not being met, right? So I'll read off some of these needs just so people get a sense of the detail that's available for these feelings and need sheets. The need for connection. Under that, there are all kinds of other needs that we're aware of. Need for acceptance, affection, appreciation, authenticity, communication, companionship, community, intimacy, a need for integrity, friendship, respect, security, stability, shared reality. That's a big one for me. When your need for shared reality is not being met by what somebody is saying or doing, support, understanding, trust. These are all powerful needs that we have that may not be met in a certain situation. So the first step is to articulate these and see which feelings and needs are involved in the situation you're in. Then the next step is to begin to understand what's going on with the other person. You don't even have to talk to them to do this. So you can just in your own mind start to think about what feelings they might be experiencing when they said something to you that you didn't like hearing, and what needs of these universal needs that we're talking about, what needs are not being met for them. And now you can go through this just on your own without interacting with the other person at all. And that process alone may allow you to feel a little bit differently about your interaction with that person. You might get to the point where you understand them a little bit just from going through this process. Now, if you're working with that person and you want to be able to communicate with them without them pushing your buttons, right? So if you want to have that kind of interconnection with them, then you may be able, once you have given yourself empathy, which is, as I said, specifically articulating the feelings and needs that are up for you regarding this relationship, you could then go that next step of giving the other person empathy. And what that means is approaching them, and instead of, let's say, reacting to the thing that you don't like that they said or did, and that could, of course, cause the whole thing to devolve if you kind of say that you don't, that they're an idiot or whatever it is, you know, give them a label or something like that. That's not going to work so well. But if you were to connect with them and just ask them, are you feeling upset because you could use more of whatever applies in that situation? Maybe they need more support. Support is one of those universal needs. Or maybe they need some consideration or something else, respect. It could be respect or understanding or trust. And if you actually were to ask them if that was true, then that might help to open up a line of communication that you didn't have with them before. And you're just talking at the level of feelings and needs, not at the level of the story, like what happened. You know what I mean? Like the specific details. And that is, if you want to go there, that is a way to begin to open up those channels of communication. Because then they see that you're actually thinking really about what's going on for them and you care about it. And that's a powerful way of allowing people to connect, even if they might be in conflict. Any thoughts about that, Catherine or Sharon?
Yeah, I was thinking about it, and as you were speaking, I just wanted to remind people, though, that on Tuesday, February 11th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Tom Bond, the founder of the New York Center for Nonviolent Communication, will be offering a live interactive broadcast and workshop on nonviolent communication, and you can go to Facebook for the live online or to watch the recording later, and that's facebook.com/thewecampaign. But what I was thinking about, and what was really interesting to me, is that this is something that most people don't encounter. It makes me wonder how we even are still semi-civilized on the planet, because I don't think children, young people, encounter this perspective anywhere in their education, unless they have a connection to a parent or maybe a religious group or something. But there doesn't seem to be much of this going on in our institutions where young people are educated and cared for. And Sharon, since I know that you have worked with young people, maybe you can give us an idea of how this might be integrated into our school systems, or how you think would be the best way to introduce it to fresh minds and young minds before they become caught up in some of these other toxic systems of thinking.
You hit the nail on the head, at least one of the nails that's important, I think, Catherine, which is, you're right, many people are not exposed to the level and the detail that NVC offers, nor are they fully open and exposed to no judgment, just love. But I think, Rick, you may have more of the statistics. There are a lot of people around the world having taken over the years the nonviolent, the NVC course. So it is infiltrating, I think is how I want to use that word, throughout the world. Now, as far as our society here and our education system, I think that there is an opportunity to use No Judgment, Just Love as a door opener and then get into the details of nonviolent communication. And one of the needs, Catherine and Rick, I think that many people are experiencing not getting filled up with is being seen that they matter. And in our school system, there's so many requirements for teachers and administrators to achieve in order to get funding, in order to get to teach. There's too many kids in school. We have a structure where they have to wake up early and they're maybe not even awake to hear the learning. But if we can just at some point throughout the day begin to let our children know, we see you, you matter, you're important, instead of what happens, not always through malice, but we just disregard because we're so busy with other things. People want to know they matter.
Yeah, I think that is key. And may very well be at the root of all kinds of conflict that people get engaged in, because it is very often about getting the attention. And even having that need for attention can be derided in some ways, as if people are somehow conceited or something if they want to have attention. And we don't honor that. That's just, as Rick was explaining earlier, almost like food, a human need. And we need to acknowledge that more. So maybe, Sharon, we're actually getting close to the end of this broadcast. Maybe you could speak a little bit more about your work and how people can connect to what you're doing if they want to make some of these transitions, or if they want to bring their family to you, or maybe they want you to be part of their education as a consultation or something like that. How do people connect with you, and what would you recommend that they do?
Oh, Catherine, thank you so much for the opportunity to do that. I want to let people know, first of all, that I am available through a lot of different portals. If you're here where I live in Arizona, we can meet in person. If you would prefer not to be seen in a video, we can speak on the phone. If you would prefer to have video, I have Zoom, and we can see each other. So I'm able to serve you globally, wherever you are in the world. The first thing is that I always, always offer a conversation that is at no cost, so that you can determine whether I am the right person for you, and I can affirm for you that I have tools to help you. So the way you can interact with me is getting on my website, which is www.thewholefamilycoaching.com, and there's a contact page. You also get to peruse the website to see other services that I provide, or you can call me at 480-420-9551, or email me at Sharon@thewholefamilycoaching.com. Now, I can serve you a number of different ways. There's one-on-one coaching. There's family coaching. What I'm working on right now is going into the middle schools here in our community, helping parents and students and teachers reduce their stress. So I write workshops and deliver them to groups groups. Group learning is awesome because you can be seen or not and still get advantage of all the information. I also have two books. The first one is Children and Divorce. So helping families through divorce is a very important time in communication. Rick and Catherine, you would probably agree with me that that is quite often very violent communication as you're transitioning your family from marriage to divorce. And then for the young ones, I have a coloring journal book called No Judgment, Just Love. And that you can find on Amazon.com.
Excellent. That's fine. And Rick, I would have to say that I have always known you in the context of We and the We campaign. And I know that you have started out as a musician and someone who was working in the arts with really famous people or very prominent people, but you've somehow gravitated towards this mission of bringing the world together, We the World. So I would love for you to give a bit of your personal self-inspiration that brings such dedication to the work of creating this unity through all of these projects that you're working on throughout the years, many years now.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yes, back in the day, I'm talking about 30 years ago and more, I was doing music full time and I was writing music for TV shows like ABC, NBC, CBS, commercials, full-length feature films and all of that stuff. And I performed with people like Queen Latifah and Carlos Santana and Judy Collins and all kinds of interesting folks. And but what I realized in the 1990s was that, you know, what good is a music career if the world is going down the tubes, you know? And, you know, I love music and I'm still doing music. But at a certain point, I started back then volunteering with nonprofit organizations, just thinking maybe I can do something more hands-on to help this world become a place that works for all. And what I found by going to a bunch of meetings in the 1990s, people had this, had a kind of a running theme across all of these different groups. They would say, oh, we're doing good work, but why are we not collaborating more with others? Why is this whole movement so fragmented? And that gave me the idea to create an organization that's based on collaboration and it's based on expanding the idea of we. And that's what I did. I founded We the World in 1998, got a board together, and we started getting people like Jane Goodall and Desmond Tutu involved and Deepak Chopra and Robert Thurman and many, many others. And it's really about expanding the concept of we. So that's why it's We the World. That's why it's we.net. So this idea of nonviolent communication is part of that. You know, I think the more that we can work together, the more that we will be able to deal with the existential threats that we now are faced with. Like, as I was saying before, the, you know, climate change, mass extinction of species, poverty, militarism and war, the nuclear threat, all of these things, we have the power to resolve the conflicts that are keeping us from working on these things together. I know Tom Bond talks about peace technology. In a sense, that's what nonviolent communication is. It's peace technology. It's a way that we know that we can resolve conflicts. These techniques have been used to resolve conflicts in many places around the world. And one thing I wanted to mention, we were talking about how young people, this is not often taught to young people. Well, sometimes in some places, NVC is taught to young people, and it's been found that young people absorb this very quickly. In fact, more quickly than adults. So, because as people get older, they get kind of, they get ideas that are established. It's sort of like programming in a sense, right? Cultural programming. Oh no, that's not going to work. Part of the, one of the biggest problems that couples face in relationships is just the idea that they can't work it out. Oh no, so-and-so is not going to ever change. So that kind of way of thinking is half of the battle, or maybe it's 90% of the battle, if you have the confidence that things can change, that someone else could change, and that you might be able to resolve the conflict.
Excellent. We're just about out of time. And I think that this is wonderful. I want to continue this conversation because we can inspire many to come on board with this collaboration because people can come with whatever talents they have, whatever their personal inspiration desires are to achieve in the world. And when I look at the both of you and I reflect on how I've lived my life, we're just people doing what we can to make life better. And so I salute both of you and I thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you so much. And I hope that people will join us on the upcoming event, Tuesday the 11th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
Give out that Facebook page again for people to find.
Yes. So you can watch it. It's going to be Facebook Live. So it's facebook.com/TheWeCampaign. And just look for it. If you like that page, you know, you just click on like, then you'll be notified when the broadcast is starting.
Excellent. And we'll finish on that note. Thank you both. And so long for now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.